Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Operations Officer Philip Gilfus, stranded here on this planet with Science Officer Daniel Prue and Chef Darren Moser, and we have had those titles the entire time we've done this podcast. It's been obvious we've had those roles the whole time. So, gentlemen, how is your Trek week going?
It was going a little better when I read that as Chief, but I misread it, so Chef, okay.
Wait, you can't just change what you are, Darren. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
It's just one letter difference, Philip. I mean, it's not that big of a change, but I mean, I'm really just going to be it's like having a person stand in your room, and when you want some food, rather than go to the replicator yourself, you say, "Chef, please get me a bowl of spaghetti." And then I walk over, enter in the proper number, and bring you. I mean, it's really, I don't think there's room in the budget for this anymore. I don't think we need this position in the podcast.
Darren, if you want to be chief, that's fine, because I'll be master chief.
I'll be assistant to the chief.
Well, y'all have any Trek things going on? I just downloaded the new Star Trek magazine issue.
I do.
So, go ahead.
I started my alphabetical rewatch of Star Trek.
Ooh.
Remind us what the first episode was.
It is 11:59. Which is not... I kind of don't like that episode generally. When I watched it this time, I didn't hate it as much as I normally do. I don't love it. But it's not my favorite episode of all time. Again, this actually fits into the theme of the episode because you can't play your own descendant! I guess she wouldn't be her own descendant. She would be her own ancestor. But... anyways, yeah, so it's kind of bothersome, but, you know, it's interesting. It's really interesting to watch, like, alternate future history of the turning of the millennium, you know, when yeah, I was there and stuff.
We all know the Millennium Gate. It's very, very famous. I mean, you've been, right, to the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's right next to the 1997 Eugenic Wars Memorial.
Yeah. That's right. Never forget.
What about you, Darren? Any Trekkie things going on in your week?
So, I got a little behind, like, stopped it completely, my rewatch of alphabetized Next Gen. So what I've decided to do is I'm going to backdate it so that by the time I finish it, it will be the day that Next Gen premiered, like the actual anniversary of it. So I will watch it at some point over, you know, gosh, how many? Like 170, what, it was like 172? I can't remember. Something like that.
That's funny. I feel like we should know.
I feel like we should.
I think it's 178.
So that's my plan, is to watch it, but just not necessarily from the first. So I will watch it. I just have to, I postponed it slightly. But I did watch, I watched two episodes the other day. I watched The Offspring, which is always a good one, with Lal and Data. I was thinking about newborn children with our friend Tristan and his new little one, and not sleeping and not watching television, all those good things. And
well, hopefully his daughter hasn't, like, baby hasn't, like, made out with someone, you know, that would have been a little earlier.
That's true. I always forget that part where it's like you start to see Riker come in. I'm like, that's right. We have not seen him in this whole episode up till now. Where has he been? Or they even make a mention, like, over the comm, Commander Riker's shuttle has arrived, a.k.a. he hasn't been here the entire time and has no idea what's going on. Like, it's really subtle, but...
It was Frake's week to wear jeans, and so he didn't want to come on.
Actually, I think he directed
He's actually
episode.
Directing the episode.
Yeah, he was directing
it. So we'll give it to him. But I watched that, and then I watched Sins of the Father, one that I don't watch as often, a.k.a. Darren forgetting that this is where the exchange program happens with the Klingon coming back on the Enterprise. I think if I had watched... Because I always think of Sins of the Father as, like, the latter half, where, you know, you have Picard as the...
It's the Klingon second.
Yeah, Tadich. That's right.
That's it. Ooh, Tadich. Tadich. Very good. Wow.
But I always forget the beginning with Kern as the exchange program. It's so fun. This Klingon out of water. And it's just really fun to watch him impact on the Enterprise crew. So
I will try some of your replicated dead bird meat.
He's actually really like tactful because he, you know, especially to the captain, like pretty much it's the only person he's tactful to. But he's like, I'm sure it's prepared wonderfully, but it just doesn't lack, it lacks the flavor we're used to. And then he puts a dig in on Worf. So, I mean, he's accomplished a lot today, so.
Well, and I also love how, like, on the bridge, like, you know, he's like, oh, with your permission, Captain. Picard's like,
yeah, I know. He's like,
all these people around.
I want to see how this pans out. No, you know, I'm just going to make you acting captain for a day, and let's just see how much the ship is left by the end of that. So, but no, it was, I mean, it actually was really good.
Captain Picard's secretly like, so you all think I'm a hard ass, huh? Let's see it, huh?
So on a scale of Kern to Jellicoe, how hard was this man? All right. But yeah, so always good watching a couple episodes.
Cool. Well, we've talked about a lot of messing with time here. No, this isn't a time travel episode, though maybe it is. But what we're going to be talking about is a very, not unique to Star Trek, but something Star Trek has done a lot, and that's retconning. And so, you know, in the old days, you'd open up the old Webster's Dictionary and define it, but this is the 21st century, so I'm opening up the Urban Dictionary. So according to the Urban Dictionary, number one, retcon in the original meaning is adding information to the backstory of a fictional character or world without invalidating that which had gone before. But there's number two definition, which is the more common usage, and that is adding or altering information regarding the backstory of a fictional character or world, regardless of whether the change contradicts what was said before. And that's, I think, where we're going to live here.
So one of those definitions has been read by the Star Trek Discovery crew, and the other one has not. But the question is, which one?
Oh, boy. So also we should also state the etymology of the word, which is a simplified definition, which it's just retroactive continuity. So going
can you
back
use it in a sentence, Daniel?
Holes. Sure. No, I can't.
Thanks, Data. All right, let's go ignite the
would that be the biggest
now.
Retcon?
One is the definition, the other is not.
Would that be the biggest retcon of them all, of Captain Picard changing the way we say Data from the very first episode?
Oh.
I keep seeing that
article, I haven't read it,
and I'm like,
that's a meta retcon.
Yeah. Okay, well, and I'm going to let you all kind of pinpoint the ones you think of. But I think one of the biggest ones in Star Trek that always gets to me, and obviously it sounds like I'm going to complain about it, which I am, and that is, and I think one of the things we'll talk about is the retcon. Is it the number one or is it the number two? And I feel like this is the number two, and that is Deep Space Nine, and that is Dr. Julian Bashir, who was genetically engineered the entire
That's
time.
Why he's so good at darts, Philip. I mean, they had to explain it. No human could possibly be that good at darts.
Well, like, one of the things, because I'm not discounting that it is a good storyline and that they use it for great effect in various ways and that they do stick with it. It's not just like they mention it for this episode and then never mention it again. No, I mean, they keep with it. It keeps getting brought up, and it's sort of like Julian kind of comes out of the closet after that episode about, yep, now I'm going to be all the, you know, exactly. But, you know, it's one of those things of, like, I don't want writers not to be afraid to do things with characters and say, like, oh, here's this thing that was there the whole time. But it's just such a huge aspect of that character. Like, I know one of the things he always complains about, and I guess it is the first season, you know, when that fellow med school grad comes to the station and he's afraid to meet her because she was the valedictorian and he was the salutatorian because he missed that question, which I'm sure someone now knows.
Post-ganglionic fiber for a pre-ganglionic nerve, yep. Something like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and so that whole episode, which I don't know what the name of it, but it's, you know, he's like, oh, da-da-da-da, and that keeps in my head, and then, you know, and then he meets her, and she like, doesn't even remember who he is, but all that stuff, and so it's let down. But then, like, you know, four seasons later, it's like, oh no, I missed that question on purpose because I don't want to be too perfect. I'm like, well, that's not what happened
right.
at all.
He's told us several occasions that he wanted to get that right.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate and then shoot myself.
Be Feklar's advocate.
And Feklar's advocate and then shoot myself down. Because
okay.
what the idea would be is that he knows and he's obviously overcompensating for it. That's why he goes around telling this story from time to time, especially when something important or significant comes up like that. That's the Feklar's advocate argument for that. But the problem is here, the difference between retconning something and learning something new about your character, because that's essentially what we're trying to do. It's you're trying to go and tell a story about an aspect of the character that you know and reveal something new about them. It's a very fine line, but the line that you cross is when you fundamentally change the character in a way that was never kind of hinted at or even suggested before. And that's what this does. And it does it well enough. I mean, there's some awkwardness to it, like we're talking about. But if they had known about this even a season in advance, they could have prepared the viewer. But they didn't. You know, they came up with it, and it was just something they wanted to do. So, yeah, it just seems like it comes out of nowhere.
I think it would have been better if Julian hadn't known. If this had been the reveal to him, that would have kind of softened it as a viewer. So, I mean, yes, it's still a massive change, but the fact that the way our character has been acting and aware up to now is unchanged because he didn't know.
That would be really difficult to do, though. I mean, he would have to not be aware of how he's a computer, basically, and has perfect reflexes.
He would hear music coming from the promenade walls, and then he would be like, what does that mean? And then suddenly it would be revealed. I don't know. Well, like, one of the things I was about to say, because the challenge for me is that, you know, does pre-outed Bashir compare with post-outed Bashir? You know, is there a major difference, or does it, like, okay, yeah, it's the same thing. But, like, with pre-Bashir, I was going to say he's insecure, but I mean, I know he comes across sometimes as arrogant, or all the time, possibly, but he still has... I mean, to me, do you agree, a bit of insecurity to him? Whereas I think post-outed Bashir is very confident, you know, but maybe he was always that way.
I mean, his arc kind of goes in that direction anyways. He's obviously supposed to be the green character, the new guy, and he gains confidence. Like, you do start with this arrogance, this raw arrogance, which kind of grows into confidence. I think that there is a conscious leap there after he's allowed to be as good as he is. And that's where the writing kind of comes into play, I think. But was it necessary? I don't know. I mean, we could argue that one way or the
other,
I suppose.
Because I read, this doesn't mean it's true, but I read that this was an because it doesn't make sense that I read this, but I read it in a Star Trek magazine, and they were interviewing Sadig, or Alexander, whatever his name is. About, you know, the storyline, and he was saying something like they were trying to make him more Data-like, to make him more quote-unquote interesting or something like that. And he wasn't a fan of it, personally, is what he said. But I'm not disputing that it does make a good storyline, does come up later. You know, the different, whatever you call them, the other folks who are genetically engineered, they were interesting, I think, those stories. And the fact that he was kind of open and got to be sort of the computer almost sometimes afterwards. And the fact that Miles made him, like, stand across the room and doing darts. But again, like, that whole competition, yeah, like, every time they played darts or played, not spring ball, but that other game they were playing, where they, like, just kept playing for, like, 3 days straight. Like, Bashir should always win, you know? And so
right.
he was choosing
not to.
Yeah.
I mean, he did, though. I mean, if you go back and watch that episode, Julian, mm-hmm. I mean, Miles is all upset because he keeps losing to this guy, and he's not what he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not super. It's not the worst example of retconning. It's just really obvious. It's super blatant, and just like, oh, by the way, this guy that you've known this whole time is different now.
I mean, I guess if I wanted to do academic analysis, it would be interesting to do it as a metaphor for, you know, being literally in the closet, as we would commonly use that term, and versus being outed, and that, you know, has he been holding himself the way he lives, you know, the whole before and then afterwards? Is he just like now out and proud, and, you know, and then does that mean he's more self-assured and all that stuff? But anyway, but that was my example. Do you either of you have an example that stands out in your head as a huge retcon in Trekdom?
I have a very sad one, actually.
Oh, okay. Let's bring it down. What do you got, Daniel?
It's the bloody, bloody Cardassian War. I mean, it was just a tough period of time. You know, we lost a lot of good people.
Minstrel boy.
It's this, you know, it's treated as the, we've joked about this before and talked about it, but it's this thing that comes in out of nowhere, was a year long, years and years long, brutal conflict, allegedly. And we don't hear, we never hear about it before, and we very rarely, if ever, hear about it again, even though it's super significant. You know, only in Miles' history does it seem like anybody remembers the Cardassian War, you know, and occasionally somewhere else. But it's just like, okay, I guess this thing did happen, but I don't know.
What do you mean? Setlik Memorial Day was celebrated every year on the, did you not?
No. Did everybody have the day off?
But they all still wore their uniforms, oddly enough. Yeah, because it was one of those things that, you know, if this had been introduced in season like 2, you could be like, okay, you know, we didn't see it before because this is just season 2. But it was, what, season 3 or 4 where this was like introduced, of like the wounded. I don't, someone can look that up while I'm talking, but the wounded, it was that was the first mention. And yeah, so it's not like, well, we just got peace, you know, like 2 months ago. We're like, whoa, wait, we've been at war the whole time?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, the middle of season 4, so we had 3.5 seasons.
Guys, obviously,
this.
The flagship would be nowhere near a war.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the Dominion War. Did you ever see the Enterprise E in there?
Nope. I mean, was it around, though, or hadn't it been destroyed by that point?
I mean, it was around.
No, the Enterprise E.
Oh, well, it was being built, you know. I don't know.
Insurrection.
If only there was a book about it being built and starting.
Nah, but there's not, so we won't talk about it.
But there's not.
Well, it's interesting because you have the entire Deep Space Nine premise. You know, you joked about that earlier. Is that backstory that you have the invasion of Bajor, you have the occupation, you have, you know, this whole, you know, for lack of a better word, World War II story, and then it's like, oh, never mind, Cardassian Union fell. It's the whole time, you're like, oh.
And in the, you know, it's never presented this way, but in the context of an actual Cardassian war that was just, you know, just kind of resolved, the entire Cardassian-Bajoran conflict with regards to the Federation coming in to Deep Space Nine and all that actually really changes the tone of that, because it goes from us being merely, the Federation going in being merely, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just generous. No. Like, the kind of narrative that we hear most of the time is that we're just, you know, we want to admit Bajor to the Federation. We're going in there as benevolent. And It changes the tone if you include the Cardassian War, because now it's, we're using Bajor essentially as a political tool, a political pawn, in a kind of a Cold War scenario almost, or at least just to stick it to the Cardassians. I don't know, but it, even Deep Space Nine doesn't really, really go too far into the Cardassian Federation conflict. It's all about the Cardassian Bajoran stuff.
Right. And then, I mean, if you want to go into deep into the metaphor, which I don't think they ever explore in Deep Space Nine, you know, the metaphor would be in World War II, at least with the United States, you know, that, you know, we knew theoretically that camps were going on in Germany and elsewhere by the Nazis, and, you know, did we go about liberating, or, you know, was that the focus, or did we kind of like, well, we know about it, we'll ignore it, blah, blah, blah. And so with the Federation, you know, if they knew the Cardassians had occupied Bajor, did they try to do anything to help Bajor, or was it just like, you know what I'm saying? But there's never sort of that resentment, I would think, from the Bajorans, like, where were you, Federation? And, you know, oh, now that we're, you know, whatever, you're here, but where were you, you know, 5 years ago when we needed you?
Well, to be fair, I'm pretty sure that's Kira's entire plot line in the first episode. Like, we can handle this on our own, you know. But I don't know. I never really thought about the Deep Space Nine angle of it, but it's interesting because, and maybe I'm forgetting a reference, like an overt reference to like hostilities and stuff between the two, but it's always glossed over, you know, always pushing the Cardassian Bajoran conflict, certainly over the Federation one.
Right.
Retcon.
Hashtag retcon. So what about you, Darren? Do you have any retcon example that comes to mind?
Well, I think the first one that comes to my mind is Zefran Cochran. Now, it is a retcon in the fact that it's changing kind of the history of a character that we've already heard of. So we were first introduced to Zefran Cochran in Metamorphosis, the TOS Enterprise, the TOS episode, season 2, episode 9. But, you know, the age of the character doesn't line up with what we see in First Contact. And it's obviously not, you know, James Cromwell. There's no pigs around. But, I mean, this is a minor case in the fact it's just using this name. It could have just been another name as far as they know. But I think
it couldn't have. Because they specifically state that he was the creator of warp drive.
Okay, that's true. I guess that's the reason to keep it. But I think, you know, yeah. Well, but I mean, obviously, I like what they do in First Contact. I love the movie and all the extra backstory. I mean, who wouldn't want a backstory movie that's all about you? That's pretty much Zefran Cochran and First Contact.
Because I think, and oh lordy, I read a book. Because I do that. No, I read a Star Trek book that talked about Zefram Cochran's story. And I can't even think of the name. But anyway, it was like the Metamorphosis. I mean, well, let me say this a different way. It was the young, it was the old Cochran. Basically, it explained why did he leave Earth. You know, because that's the story in Metamorphosis we're told.
Right.
And you're right, I haven't seen the episode lately. But something, 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 Zefran Cochran leaves Earth in a ship to wander
yet
around.
Yet comes back at some point to found the Warp 5 complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the Cochran we see in, like, even in the video on Broken Bow doesn't seem like, hey, F you, Earth, I'm out of here, you know, like.
Well, it's got to be after that, right? Because he's still out there.
He's got to go around to all the namings of the schools after him, each one. And the statue commissions, I mean, and that takes a while.
He gets sick of it.
To build
I'll
that.
Come back when they're, I'll come back where when I get my statue where Geordi said it was going to be. That's when I'll come back to planet Earth.
But yeah, I agree, because, like, you know, even the young Cochran we see in Metamorphosis doesn't seem like he's a hard drinker. Because, I mean, let me rephrase, because the young Cochran we see in Metamorphosis is actually old Cochran. He's just been physically made younger. He's the same character we know in First Contact and Broken Bow. He's just older, but yet looks younger. So he doesn't strike you as the ooby-dooby, hard-drinking, you know,
look,
whatever guy.
Look, he was changed by the Vulcans.
I
mean,
I
in the Mirror Universe, a little more so, but yeah. No.
The sense, of course, in First Contact, that through history, he's become much more legendary, much more famous person-y. Like,
seasoned,
much more,
I think is the word you're looking for.
Yeah. I'm sure all of the rough edges were sanded down. But of course, you know, back in the 60s, they didn't know what they were going to do with that character, so.
Because, like, the Metamorphosis guy is, I don't want to say sexist is the right word, but he's kind of chauvinistic. Because he's like, you know, I can't remember characters. I want to say your name's Nancy. I could be wrong. But anyway, the Federation envoy who's sick in that episode, who all I can remember is that she was in Father Knows Best. She played the daughter. But anyway, which is funny because, like, the episode either before or after is Babel, where Jane Wyatt, who plays Spock's mom, was also in Father Knows Best, who played the mother. And I think it's funny. But anyway, back to episodes. But anyway, and it just doesn't really match those two characters that we see. I mean, that's true. So, like, when they were writing First Contact, I don't think they bothered to, like, hey, let's watch Metamorphosis to figure out this character. They're just like,
no, yeah. They didn't care. But, you know, it. But again, I think they use him well, and it's not a terrible retcon, but it is, like, he is a kind of pivotal part of Metamorphosis, of that episode, and it's kind of like, no, you're this guy now, but, you know, it's not too bad of an offender.
One I wanted to bring up, and I know I'm going to kind of sort of, this is an easy one, and I know, and I don't want to make, you know, just do the easy hit, but I'm still going to do it, and that's Enterprise. And, like, the entire series. I mean, that's a whole rush. But, you know, and again, I don't, because we're going to go into Discovery, and I'm sure they're going to do the same thing, and we're going to be like, we've never heard of this. And, you know, whatever. We got to obviously be open to them screwing around with the timeline a little bit, and that's fine, right, as long as whatever. But I think that was a hard part, right? I mean, were you guys, when you were watching Enterprise, the whole time going, well, that's what? And I think the hardest part for me with Enterprise, because a lot of it I let it fly and tried to be open. I think season three, when it's like, yes, the Zindi War, which we've all talked about.
Yeah, that was like, a bit much.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, like, in the first season when it was, where are the Denobulans? Like, why do we only ever see Phlox? Why were they? That stuff is super easy to get around because there are so many, you know, aliens, whatever, it's fine. When you start saying that there was a serious attack on Earth and a whole war and then all this other stuff, and it's like, yeah. And it's, you're absolutely right, Philip. It's the exact same issue that Discovery is going to have. Like, we have this established period of time and we know that some things happen in it. And of course, a lot of things that we don't know happened, of course. It's okay to fill in those little holes, but what they're going to try to do, because this is what writers have to do, is make them save the galaxy over and over, and bigger threats and bigger things are happening, and they're going to intertwine it with everything else we already know, and then there's just going to be gaps, and there's going to be missing parts. So that's right. What they did.
And I don't want to take away from the value of season three. Like, I'm not a big season three fan. I'll say that up front. But I can't ignore that. That is well written. There's an arc there. There are stories that were told that are good, that are great. Episodes and arcs and all that. And with all of Enterprise and with season three in particular. But, you know, does it fit well? Yeah. You know, does that radically change? Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of hard to make that happen.
Fortunately for Enterprise, it was done in a time period that we didn't know a ton about. So they had a little more wiggle room, but I don't know, with Discovery, it doesn't feel like they're going to have that much, especially since it's so close behind TOS. I mean, if it goes long enough, it's going to go into TOS time. I mean, like, so I don't know how they're going to do
that. 10 years.
No. Oh, was it 10? I thought it was 5.
I think 10 years, I think, is what they're saying. Well, they've been saying decades, so how fast and loose they'll play with that, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
But the fact also that there's another, and again, I'm harping on it, but that there's another Enterprise, right? Oh, guys, see that picture of all the Enterprises in motion picture and in everything we've ever seen? Turns out, if you went to the little left, there's a corner around the wall. There's actually another picture of an Enterprise that we've never shown you that
yeah.
The whole time.
And it was, yeah.
Are you talking about? So you're talking about for Enterprise, not for Discovery. Hasn't said that they have another Enterprise in there, right?
No. I'm talking about NX-01. No, because the Enterprise is actually there in Discovery. Yeah. The 1701's already there. Christopher Pike or Robert April is already there. You know, so
will Robert April be? Do you think he'll be animated?
I think he'll be glad to be there.
Okay, good. That's good to hear.
But I mean, you know, I was going to say I love Enterprise. That's not
so. Okay, so here's a perfect example, though, right? Mm-hmm. Retconning can be done well, and a good example of that in Enterprise is the Vulcan relationship with the humans. I think it changes them enough where something new is happening, but it also makes sense in a larger historical context, and it works. It's something we had never heard of before because why would we? I mean, why would we hear about, you know, attitude-y Vulcans? But it works. For the most part, I think it works. The Enterprise thing is more of a nitpick for a retcon. It is a retcon, but you're absolutely right. When we're specifically shown the history of starships with the name Enterprise over and over again, and you don't see this one, well, okay, guys. I mean, you could have done something else.
and I think, and we're going to move on from Enterprise, but I you know, cause it's an easy punching bag, even though it's a great series, folks. We do love it. But I think if we just really want to go for the huge target of retconning, it's going to be right here. Talking about foreheads, gentlemen.
Oh yeah.
Talking about Klingons. You know, that was something that happened, guys. We retconned the Klingons from TOS being canon appearance to TNG DS9 Voyager. And then, I don't know what you want.
Yeah, why did they do it? I don't know. I don't know why they did it. Why did they do it? I don't know. I mean, Worf's reaction is really funny in, Troubles and Tribulations.
Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah. and a great response, and that's all we needed. I don't think anybody was clamoring. I mean, I guess there are probably some people, some fans that really, really needed an explanation other than, hey, we have more money to do this now. But no, because now what's Discovery going to do?
Yeah, honestly, they should. I mean, I give Discovery a bit of slack for the fact that we totally did change the Klingons between not just the original series and Next Gen, but the original series and the movies. So the fact that if they change like how the Andorians look or how the Klingons look, like, it's kind of just like, hey, this is a human, this is a Klingon. As long as you can kind of tell what it's supposed to be, it's not really that big a deal. It really shouldn't be.
I mean, like, even JJ, because, I mean, theoretically, the Kelvin doesn't affect how a species looks.
Nope.
I don't know. I mean, that vortex was pretty dang powerful.
I guess.
No, and it acknowledges Enterprise's existence fairly heavily with Beyond, certainly starting with Into Darkness and then going heavily into Beyond, and still has Klingons that have ridges and stuff. So it's, oh man, it's so frustrating because it's obviously budget. The Enterprise in the movies looks different than the Enterprise in the show. Even the D looked very different in the movie than it did in the show. We understood why they had a budget. They could make a really special snazzy one. Why is it so hard for people to understand that? Okay. Things will change a little bit over time, and that's okay. You don't need an in-universe explanation for that. That seems so silly to me.
Right. No, I agree. Okay, let's stop from beating up on prequels. Any other big retcons for either of you, or even small ones?
Well,
Pulaski banged Riker's dad.
That's not a retcon.
I know, I'm kidding. Actually, I have no problem with that at all.
I mean, that would make a great shirt.
Well, you brought up Next Generation. One, I feel like this is a retcon because it at some point does fall apart for me, and that's Data's family tree. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're told, you know, Data's just found. Okay, he just found. Okay, that's fine. It turns out he had a creator. It's Noonien Singh. Okay, I can buy that. So there's this guy. There's a guy. And that makes sense. Then there's Lore. That's fine. There was a prototype. There's one prototype. It didn't work, or it went out of control. He had emotions, and there was Data. And that's it. That's the end of the story. There's no... Okay, so then there was his mother. Okay. Who is also an android, who is actually superior, really, to Data in having emotions. And was... Okay, it's a little hard to take, but okay. That's fine. B4. Okay, guys. We can't stop making up.
And then there was... I think... In the eighth season, they had one called CUZ, and I think it was Data's cousin, but we never got that far.
Yeah. And that was the cousin, Eddie, and it just never works.
No, I agree. I totally agree. They should have stopped with Lore. I mean, I guess technically you'd stop with Lol. You know, RIP, never forget.
But, too soon, Daniel.
but that's not a retcon, because he created her. That is a new family member.
It's just a con.
Yeah. Con! it's totally with the mom that I don't like that at all for a lot of reasons. Like you just mentioned, that's a more advanced android than anything we've seen before. She doesn't even know she's an android. Oh wait, no, she does. Doesn't she? She's hiding it from dad. I can't remember.
No, she doesn't know because like the hologram of Noonien says, don't tell her.
Right. That's exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay. And then of course B4, which is why not just use Lore? What? Okay. But that's it. Yeah. Yes, because I'm going to rant again, but we've learned so much about Data's past. We've literally visited the planet there. We've seen the children's drawings, and there is not a whole five family, you know, group of Data and all of his family members. I get it. They could have drawn Data and then maybe get confused. Data.
They didn't have time to draw Data's family. They were busy drawing the crystalline entity.
As it killed them all.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think of, yeah, no, it just doesn't.
Do you want to jump into another one, Philip? Because I have a good one.
No, go ahead. Wait, Daniel, do you have another one?
I do. So I think it's one of the only times we get character name change. But somehow, during his academy years, Nick Lacarno changed into Tom Cruise.
Wow. Yeah.
Who knows how? Just,
yeah, because that's not necessarily a retcon, but it's just like so similar. You're like, really? You couldn't have made it a different story? Like, make him not have a pilot accident that killed people? I don't, you know, okay. Okay, this is a, all right. This is a small one that I'll bring up before I go into a big one, because we're gonna, I think, really small ones. Is that Kirk has a son with Kel Marcus, and I mean, I don't know if we're trying to do the math of when we're saying that they met and had son.
Space but, babies.
Yeah, I would assume we would agree it was during the 5-year mission timeline. I mean,
I don't know. How old do you think David is in
Well, Death of Khan? We know how old Kirk is, right? He's turning... Well, do we know how old he is? Because I know he's having a birthday in Star Trek 2. Is he turning 50, or am I just making that up in my head? But anyway, David appears to be... I don't know. He actually seems older than... like maybe he's supposed to be in his 20s. He looks like he's in his 30s.
It would be super easy for him to be either older or younger than the show. Then right. would have placed his conception in the show.
Right. But I just... You know, I get that, you know, and you're, Daniel, you're always my expert on future relationships. But I would think that, Jim, even if there was an understanding, oh, hey, I'm pregnant. Well, you know, we're not really a couple, you know, and in the future, I guess there's no child support.
No money. So there's how know, can you pay child support?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, is there more of a like, well, I'm gone. That's cool, right? I mean, we have a word for that in the 21st century. It's not a positive one.
I get the feeling that their relationship was not ended very well. Uh-huh. I think she made the decision to leave Kirk and take David with her. Or she was presumably maybe pregnant. I don't know at the time. This is the sense that I get. I don't know. I don't even know the canon of it. I don't know if that's the case at all. But it seems like they split on not great terms and she wanted nothing to do with him anymore.
Right. But And I mean, look, people are people, and there's 100 different reactions you could have, and none of them necessarily right or wrong. But I just feel like, you know, if you have a child out there, even if it's understood that, you know, the mother has them, and that's, you all have agreed, and that's fine. I just feel like every now and then you'd be a little bit wistful that you have progeny out there, you know, like, hey, I wonder, you know, and then like, we've never, because I feel like there's some attitudes in the way you... Like, oh, I, you know, because like, he's always like, I love the Enterprise. And like, well, you know, you also have a child out there, too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but the child isn't the Enterprise.
Well, that's true. David does not. He's actually pretty lame when compared to the Enterprise.
I don't think David has a bowling alley.
No.
Is all I'm saying.
Terrible nacelles.
But he's got quite the hair. So
That's true. And one other one I'll bring up if no one else has one is he goes back to DS9. Sorry, it's basically if I'm gonna be told to leave Enterprise alone, I'm just gonna go towards Deep Space Nine. We all know that. So guys, for 7 years, I think it was obvious, and it was really no surprise at all when we learned that Ben Sisko had a prophet mother. Oh, I mean, obvious. That was obvious the whole time. Am I right, Daniel?
No, this is the single biggest mistake I think that the writers made in Deep Space Nine. I mean, I get it. It makes sense, and it's in a way I think they probably think it's cleverer than it is. It's actually more frustrating to me than anything. It feels cheap and easy and lazy that they do this. I get it. Like, he's connected to this place. You can be connected to this place without, you know, being born of a god or whatever. I don't know. It just seems. And again, we never get any indication other than, like, that the prophets already have an interest in him. But, of course, they can see through time. So, I don't know. It's really easy to help retcon it in my head, like, because the prophets are kind of a fix-all for these sorts of things. But that doesn't make the retcon
Look,
a good
retcon.
When
they built the spheres, it's really important.
Yeah.
Do we call this a Deus Ex wormhole?
It's just, why? I mean, what good are you serving at that point? I mean, you're not raising the stakes for Sisko. They're already pretty much as high as they can get. You also if you're gonna sacrifice him at the end of the show, spoilers, you're also cheapening his death because he can't die now, I guess. I don't know. He also, does that make Jake a quarter prophet? Did nobody think about this? I mean, does that now mean that he has special powers or the new baby with Cassidy? You're leaving way more questions unanswered than you are answering.
I mean, is it just
supposed
to be a coincidence that the planet below Deep Space Nine has a god called the Prophets, yet they have a Ferengi bartender in the space station above them? I've just been informed it's spelled
differently. It's funny because,
but I still stand by my statement.
Well, because actually, if Jake was not a quarter prophet, he'd actually be a quarter shorter. So that's pretty much why that.
I don't know. And then I hate this aspect of it. I really do. I hate that episode where I think it's the season 6 finale and the season 7 opener where
he finds out.
And they're digging in the desert for an orb and that's when Ezri comes. I don't know. I just don't like that aspect of it. And then I hate with the final conclusion that it leads to. I just don't see what purpose that it actually serves the character or the show, other than now you literally have somebody possessed by the devil and somebody possessed by God fighting each other at the end. And that just seems so cheap and lazy to me, when it's so much more interesting when you actually have relatable human people that could be in that same position.
Well, DS9 needed conflict, Daniel. That's what it needed. Real conflict. Interpersonal conflict between...
I've already mentioned one movie, a great movie. I consider one of the best Star Trek movies. So let's swing the pendulum all the way over and let's talk about Spock's brother in Star Trek V.
Now, Darren, Spock doesn't have a brother. He's never had a brother.
No, he's never not have a brother. So, I mean, who do you think he was calling on that long warp sled ride out in Star Trek The Motion Picture? I mean, he's got time to kill.
Well, as Loki very famous, or not Loki, excuse me, Thor very famously said of Loki in the Avengers film, we're stepbrothers. He's adopted.
He's adopted. He killed 85 people in 2 days. He took over, Paradise City in 1 day. He's adopted.
Well, because I think not only he has that stepbrother, I mean, there's a whole story retcon. So, like, Sarek was married before to, I guess, a Vulcan woman who, I guess, died. And then after that, he went human and never went back. because he had two human wives after that.
Look, once you go Terran, never go Baron.
No, because he only had two. Well, you know, well, it's interesting because then if you want to throw out the Picard throwaway line that he attended Sarek's son's wedding, and we never know what that means.
We don't. It is true. What does that mean? That is interesting. That's a retcon. It's another retcon.
And I don't remember any brothers running around in yesteryear, in the animated series when he went back in time. So it just seems like a random thing to do in Star Trek V. Just to be like, well, this villain is his brother. Yeah, that raises the stakes, right?
It seems like a random thing to do in Star Trek V, which is totally different than the rest of that film, which is totally cohesive and makes a lot of sense. It fits perfectly, really, within the Star Trek universe. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. It's easy to forget about
Cybok.
Cybok, thank you.
Spock's brother, obviously.
Because he... No, I think... And his... That story takes away from the Spock character. Giving him a brother doesn't make anything else more interesting. It's actually taking away, I think, from the Spock character. The loneliness that he would have felt. Everything that he grew up with. I don't know. It just... This is one of the... I think probably the worst retcon, I think, in Star Trek, I would argue.
And then it also makes Sarek seem like a real bad father. Like, you know, he has this kind of rocky relationship with Spock. And apparently, like... Since he never mentions him, abandons Cybok. So Discovery. By the way, Discovery. Who is Sarek married to? Since he is a character in the show, who will Sarek be married to during Discovery?
Do we not think he's been married? Well,
Well, that's true, because Spock is alive.
Yeah, Spock's around. Yeah, we know.
But, I feel like he should let slip Cybok. Like, if you Discovery, he has to say Cybok once. I'm just saying. If you want to make Star Trek V a legitimate...
We don't. We don't want to do that. Okay. So why would we ever do that?
Sure, you're right. You're right.
So, by the way, also, just to mention, since you brought it up, the fact that Sarek is a character... I mean, we were already going to be... This show was going to be Retcon Central. This is now going to be Retcon City.
All aboard. Next stop, Retcon City.
So it'll be interesting to see how they juggle that. That seems very difficult to me, but good on you. Good luck, Discovery writers. You made your bed.
Discovery bed. So we've been leaving Voyager alone, so let's welcome them to the party.
I think Voyager has a big one.
Go ahead, Darren.
When the Borg were first on Earth, I mean, I know it's technically seeded in First Contact, but it's basically, I mean.
Actually, if you go to Enterprise, it's in
true.
Regeneration.
In Regeneration. Oh, that's what I was thinking of. What was I thinking?
I'm kidding.
I was thinking of Regeneration. But there's also the fact that we get Borg stuff that's counter to what we've learned before. The fact that these Borg are basically like First Contact Borg, yet, you know, then what about the Borg we saw in Q-Who and stuff like that? So I wouldn't go so far as say retcon, but it does kind of change origins a bit.
Well, they do, though, definitely, because Seven's origin story, and unless she was put into like a baby drawer and it's like a hyperbolic time chamber or something, there's no way that her parents should have even known that the Borg existed, let alone chasing them and researching them and all of that stuff. Yeah, that's a huge retcon.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, I know your favorite Borg retcon starts with Q and ends with Ween.
Q-Ween?
The Borg Queen.
Wow. That literally
I don't know how you pronounce Queen out there on the East Coast, Philip.
Because she was there.
That's not how we do it out in California.
But that she was there the whole time in Best of Both Worlds. Didn't you see her there, Daniel?
I don't know. I don't blame Voyager for it, only because it was established in First Contact.
Well, do you blame First Contact for it?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, no, actually, that's actually a really great example, Philip. The Borg Queen is also a huge retcon in Star Trek, because literally they reshot a scene from Best of Both Worlds and put her to the left of camera, like by an inch. Like, oh no, I was there the whole time. Let's not forget that ship blew up, and I don't know how I was there, but yeah, no, that is also a serious infraction, I'd say.
Now, and I don't know, I feel like this one doesn't bother me, but I'll still throw it out. Seska was a Cardassian the entire time.
She was. I mean, I don't feel like that was a retcon.
Oh, I see you bought it. They got you, Darren.
I don't feel like that was. Oh, let's take.
Did you know Gullible's not in the dictionary, Darren?
Like, I totally felt like that character was set up from the beginning to kind of be that reveal. But I'm unaware that that was not supposed to originally happen.
No, I actually
sound
agree
like
with you,
it
Darren.
It sounds like you're really upset.
I was just teasing you. No, I actually do agree that I think that at least it feels like the writing was there the whole time, that she was very clearly wrong, bad the whole time. I think even if this is an example of a retcon and they didn't do it originally, it feels like they did. And this would be the best example, I think, of a retcon in Star Trek, because it just fits so naturally. And it's such a good backstory for that character. And it leads to some interesting things happening. So it's a really good example of one.
Vindication.
Yeah. Because I feel like in some ways she's an interest. I mean, she is a background character, but she kind of comes out a little bit more from the background every episode. And she actually changes color. She's sort of sort of the Lieutenant J of Voyager for a little bit. She is, I don't want to say she's interesting, but like, you know, she sort of has fun with Harry and B'Elanna. She's sort of part of that kind of group, and she's sort of like your token, not major Maquis character. And so then it's like, oh, no, she's evil, apparently. Okay.
I mean,
not just evil.
Gosh, Tuvok Cardassian, was working for the Federation. Sesko was working for the Cardassians. Was anybody working for me on that ship?
Kind of a reverse retcon was the idea that Chakotay. What was the Chakotay thing?
That he was a boxer? Because I don't buy that at all.
That he wasn't interesting?
I do. I have one final example. And this is a really interesting example because it's in-universe retcon. Unlike the stuff we've been talking about is just Star Trek retcon. But what happened in this one episode actually took place in Star Trek. And that is, of course, guys, McDuff was there the whole time.
Wow. I knew you were going to bring McDuff somehow.
Yeah. He's going to appear in every episode from now on.
Just like he was always there. Yeah.
I mean, doesn't it make sense you'd have two people in red? That's why you have two other chairs on the bridge, right? Like, what are you going to have, the counselor sitting there? That doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes no sense. Unless she could feel things real strong.
Right. And did she have awkward relationships with both of them? That's my question.
You know, season two McDuff with the beard, way better than season one McDuff.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's been some of the retcons we've covered. And of course, there are probably lots more, both the ones that worked well and maybe ones that didn't work so well. But listeners, if you have ones that we missed or ones you liked better than we did or didn't like as much as we did, you can always send a communique to our base here on the planet. Just visit thenerdparty.com/contact to reach the three of us. Or better yet, you can retcon how great the show is by adding an iTunes review and helping spread the word about the show and leaving a rating. And so, speaking of retconning good things, Darren, what's next week's episode about?
Well, we've retconned many of our favorite characters to actually know how to play an instrument, but I wanted to talk about music in Star Trek. That could be the music we hear in the particular episodes. I mean, we can all place season one and season two Next Gen. I mean, it just has a distinct sound. To put it nicely, and TOS has a very unique sound, but also inside the show, the different characters, the different races, they all have music, and it seems like everyone in the Federation, it's like for your Academy entrance exam, you need to play an instrument, be it clarinet or violin or trombone, or I think of there's a great scene actually in Next Gen where I think there's like a dignitary event going on in 10 forward and someone's playing like a rhythmic sound on kind of like a, like not like a xylophone, but what's that? Cause it's an M. It's a
marimba?
Wooden xylophone. Marimba. Yes. Like a marimba. So, you know, but music is something, you know, often we just take for granted. I mean, how many times have we talked about the end of the first part of Best of Both Worlds and that ending, dun 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 dun, you know, that's just so important that without it, I mean, who would ever cut that without that? Well, we'll get to that next week. But yes, we're going to talk about music both inside Star Trek and inside the characters, but as well as in the show.
Right. And I hope we talk about the Muzak inside of the turbo lift because that's my favorite part.
Oh, there should be turbo lift elevator music. Do, 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 yes. Do, 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 bing, fourth floor.
It should be every series' theme in that ship's turbo lift.
So would it be playing really fast music when the computer was breaking and Geordi was getting thrown around in the turbo lift? It'd be like, do, 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 do.
Well, we look forward to it. Now, if folks want to maybe get some teasers about that topic or anything else, Darren, where can folks find you online?
They can find me online at Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. And they can also, if they want to see what some other things I do between watching episodes of Star Trek, they can check me out on Instagram under account Dr. Sci-Fi Props as I build droids and other things out of foam and cardboard.
All right. And Daniel, where can folks find you online to discuss the wonderful world of retconning?
I would love to talk it. And you can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
And folks can find me online, also on Twitter, at NCPublicServant, as well as a few episodes of Filibuster and Punch It that I've been on in the past month or so around here on the network. And that's because there's so many great shows on the Nerd Party Network. Like I said, Filibuster and Punch It are two of them. There's also all our great Star Wars shows, Aggressive Negotiations and Great Shot Kid. And then, of course, our Harry Potter New Kid on the Block, Owl Post, as well as a bunch of others. And so give all our shows a listen to all the great co-hosts on the network. I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.